Today we are going to start to talk about transport and electrokinetics in nanoscale fluidics. Let me try if okay, we can do that. So again, I'll just quickly revisit the materials we taught before the midterm exam. So basically, we look at all these five different constitutive equations, and they were derived independently in the past, but because we are talking about, we are involving the same type of carriers. For example, in the Fourier's law, we're talking about heat conductivity, but this heat conductivity is really induced by the type of, for example, phonons or molecules that are simultaneously transporting charges or transporting, for example, species. So in reality, there is always a coupling between those different equations. The moment you transfer heat, you are transporting, transferring mass or information charges simultaneously. So this is first observed, for example, in electron conduction. In the case of electron conduction, we see the effect of a so-called, heat to electricity conversion, that is Seebeck effect, and we also observe the Peltier effect, that is really used for cooling. Okay, applying a voltage, you can cool the devices, and they all boil down to the same set of really transport equations. Now, by considering really the Boltzmann transport equation that we introduced before, and particularly if you have now a count of the total current, then you see there is a drift current due to electricity, due to the applied electric field, and another a diffusion current. And this diffusion current now really tells you the principle of conducting heat or now species as well, right? If you now change the concentration of electrons, you will be able to really transport species. So thermoelectricity, for example, is estimated based on this this balance of these two. Now, what we show is that if we have a coupled electronic current and thermal current, then it is possible to define a so-called figure of merit. And this figure of merit really tells the competition between heat conducted through electricity or the heat that is conducted through thermal diffusion, right? And based on that, we show that now we really can do something of modifying this figure of merit, or in another term, boosting up the efficiency of thermoelectric effect or other systems, now based on really the change of density of states, based on the change of really collision time or mean free path, or based on the change of really the interface effects, right? So this is where nanostructures, nanoscale thermoelectricity really comes into play. We already see that not only density of states is changed, this will lead to really a new form of conduction or Seebeck coefficient, but also you can introduce new interfaces that impacts or really has a completely different result for electrons and phonons, because heat conductivity in our case has both contributions of electrons and phonons, and when you scatter more phonons, then the effect is reduced, the overall heat conductivity is reduced, and leading to mostly, again, electron-driven process, and that brings up a better, again, figure of merit or better efficiency. And we also saw those examples in the nanoscales really helped to improve the efficiencies, so-called figure of merit, from really a bulk value to now almost 1.5 to 2.5 region. Okay, this is a very significant advancement, and to achieve that, again, the key is to reduce thermoconductivity and increase and maintain electron conductivity by the right dimension scales. And along similar lines, we find that there are also different examples that are available in nature. For example, shark skins use a very similar principle to sense temperature using thermoelectric effect. And there are also the reversed process, like Peltier chips found or suspected on hornet skins. Okay, you see, they really can maintain their temperature colder in the hot weather. Right, so that's really what we have seen of a coupled effect of heat conduction and electric conduction in a solid state, in general, in the solid state pictures. Now, we should really broaden our horizon and look at this coupled effect in different species, in different systems. For example, what if we now study fluid or gas, or liquid or gas, right? So let's just look at this type of couplings. And not only you can use electric field, you can also apply other type of forces or really stimulus to facilitate transport. Facilitate transport of heat, facilitate transport of mass, facilitate transport of information, and so on and so forth. So this is how we are going to organize the coming lectures. The first one that we are going to talk about is really the coupled charge and mass transfer in fluid. And this is also known as a so-called electrokinetic phenomena, right? How many of you heard about this term, electrokinetics? Probably not, right? Unless if you are really working on microfluidics, particularly on this microfluidic mixers or pumps, then you will be dealing with that. But today I would like to spend time to show when what will happen when you apply a voltage to a conducting fluid. And now this is naturally coupled to other surface and interface interactions that we're going to bring about in the coming two lectures. So again, if we use the same Boltzmann distribution equation, transport equations, and now just change our notation from electrons to ions, okay, everything else is almost the same. We observed a conduction current. Now the carrier is ion in solution, and there is also a diffusion current due to ions, and this diffusion current is now sensitive to temperature or concentration. Okay, so let's use the same knowledge based on conductivity of electrons, but nowadays we just change the really the carrier to ion. What will happen? We find that we need to consider now the concentration of ions, conductive species available in the fluid, and the mobility of ions in the species in order to estimate the conductivity. And why mobility is important? Let me show you again the mobility equation. It is proportional to the charge, but inversely proportional to mass. Right? It's inversely proportional to the mass. Now, how is this being used? Since mobility of ion is sensitive to mass, it's inversely proportional to mass. If you have within the same solution, different species, and you drive them over a given period of time or time interval, what you see is the separation of species depending on their mass and charge ratio, right? So this is really the application for the well-known DNA gel electrophoresis. Okay, so on the right-hand side, what you see is really a very thin gel plate. And you apply a voltage across this, actually, along the side of the plate. Okay, along the side of the plate. So at the very beginning, you drop a very small droplet of this DNA solution or protein solution that you want to analyze. And within the solution, DNA or proteins acquire charges as well. Okay? They have a charge on their surface. So now, under this electric field, what they will do is they will start to migrate within this gel. Right? And if they have different mass, for example, different segment of DNA has a different length, right? The length is different and the mass is different. So the mobility is different. That tells that over a given period of time, they travel different lengths. They travel at a different distance. So if you wait long enough, for example, typically in an hour or so, now the DNAs of different molecular mass, molecular weight will develop into different bands. This is what you see over here. Those are the famous bands that you see in CSI or other basically forensic movies, right? And how we analyze them? We analyze them based on the fluorescence, so-called fluorescence or absorption. Okay, so you look through the gel, and they appear as a thick or dark band over there. But the real information that you got is the traveling distance, or in another word, the mobility. And you convert that mobility to a set of really DNA fragments that you know of similar mobility. And now you try to do the identifications, right? So the typical case is you have, for example, one protein and then one protein under analysis, another that is the reference. Okay, now you compare these two set of bands, you tell this is type A DNA that we're determining. Okay, so how to make it accurate and precise? Okay, to make it accurate and precise, we need to overcome diffusion. Why I'm saying so? Because when this part of DNA is moving all together, there is a diffusing effect. This is a very high concentration of band, right? There's a diffusion effect that really smears out this band. Okay, so if you try to do that in a medium with a high diffusivity, then very likely what you see is the whole band become all dark. The whole trace become all dark. There is no concentration. So you need to have a very low diffusivity but high mobility, okay, in this system to really isolate individual segments. Right? This is why gel is used. You can see now the reason gel is being used. It's very similar to what we have done for thermoelectric materials. Right? And even right now, there is still a constant push, technological advancement in this area, trying to separate different type of molecules, different type of species, based on reduced diffusion, or sometimes they call it entropic trapping, in order to facilitate this separation and identification process. Okay. So you see, right now the common practice is still of centimeter long gels and hours. If you can do that with much a precise or lower diffusivity of gels, but maintain the same high mobility, then you may be able to shorten this in a much compact form. Okay. So this is really the basics about coupled ion migration. And in general, this the electrophoresis this electrophoresis process is a very interesting phenomenon that also leads to a variety of applications such as pumping. So how is this done? The process is like this. You apply a voltage in a channel, okay, or across a channel. Now, within this channel, there is a fluid. And let's say it's a sodium chloride solution, okay? And sodium and chlorine ions will move in opposite directions, right? They will really, you know, try to find the appropriate polar electrodes. Now, this will bring basically a opposite momentum within the channel, right? So you can say that there are tracks for each of the sodium ion or chlorine ions. There are tracks that are applied to the surrounding water molecules. But the net effect is small, right? So the real momentum we gain in this fluid is only the difference of these two charges. The real momentum we gain is really the difference of these two. Not only that, there is also similar, again, effects of Joule heating and non-uniform temperature. So how come electrophoresis is considered as a useful pump? To understand this, we have to now really take a look at the effect at the surface, of the channels. Okay? So, what happens? When there is a surface, solid to liquid interface involved, we start to see a charge separation. Some ions like to stay with the solid surface, with the solid interface. They form a very dense layer. And some are not so strongly bound. Okay? They are attracted, however, by the ions that are already bound to the surface. So this forms almost like a capacitor, right? You see, this is almost like a capacitive effect. And this capacitor formed in liquid, in this liquid to solid interface, is so-called electric double layer. So if you look at it from a large scale, charge neutrality is maintained. Positive charge and negative charge are all canceling each other. But at that really very fine interface, we see there are separation of charges. So how we estimate the separation of charges? We now start to use the Boltzmann distributions, okay? Our Poisson distributions. So what we do? First of all, there will be a charge separation due to thermal excitation. So at a given temperature, again, just think about this almost like a defect in solid, right? The number of ions that are really fluctuating within this very fine region is now subject to a temperature effect. And this will be really the reason of charge distribution. And however, we want to solve this self-consistent. So this self-consistency comes from the Poisson equation. Okay? Once there is a charge, you build an electric field. And this electric field distribution has to be consistent with the charge distribution, which is really this. Okay? Now, and as I just said, there is both positive charge and negative charge in presence. So if I now treat them separately, I call this part as positive charge, positive ions, and this as negative ions. They will be separated in space. They will be separated in space. And keep in mind, this is the electric field. This Z of ion tells you, really the ZEU tells you the electrostatic energy. Right? This is the electrostatic energy. And when you flip the sign of ions from positive to negative, you start to change the sign of this exponential term too. You change this, so the charges of positive ions and negative ions follows really two different energy bands, okay, in the space. And this is very important. Why? Because we are going to do that in a just in a minute. Now, how significant is this double layer? There is a typical characteristic length that is involved. So, roughly, we can use the competition of this thermal energy, which is half of kBT, and the electrostatic energy, which is, again, in this case, it's electrostatic energy density, which is due to the charge divided by really the capacitance, right? So this is the electrostatic energy density. And the ratio of these two gives us a length. And this length is sometimes called Debye length. And how significant is Debye length? It's somewhat surprising that if you have a very high concentration, the Debye length is short. Of ions, you have very low concentration of electrolyte, then the Debye length can be very long. For 1 molar of, again, chloric acid, hydrochloric acid, you will find that the Debye length is in tens of nanometers. But if this solution is very dilute, then the Debye length can be for hundreds of microns. Is this really the case? I can tell you it's not. Why? Because there is also a competition of the dissolved ion and the activated ions or protons from water. Right? So what is the concentration of proton available in water? What is that? So we know for general for tap water, the pH is what? pH is 7, right? So that means it's 10 to minus 7 molar, 100 nanomolars, okay? So if you are dealing with a very, very low concentration of aqueous solution, then the amount of ions that you need to consider is really proton. So that will reduce this, the Debye length back to tens of microns. Still very significant. Very significant, okay? So this is really based on the fluid, okay? And how important is this Debye length? Now, let me just go through this approximation first. The approximation that I just talked about has a separated charge, okay? The positive charge and negative charge now is of different energy concentration contribution. So if I put them together and assume a same neutrality at the very beginning, now I have a hyperbolic sine function, right? Exponential of positive basically E over KT and the exponential of negative E over KT now give me a sine function, hyperbolic sine function. Okay, now I want to call this center part, or this part as a new derivative, or a new variable, which is U tilde. And I put this one back to the Poisson equation. I put this back to Poisson equation, and I find that the the Poisson equation with consideration of the balance is now a much simpler form. Okay, lambda squared times the gradient of this tilde, which is really like reduced potential, okay, is a hyperbolic function. If you like, you can solve this more rigorously, but it's highly nonlinear. Okay, there will be a lot of really ripples available within this equation. But instead, if we treat that u tilde as a small, again, variable, which I wrote over here, this usually applies when, again, the available, the actual potential or charge separation is small. Okay? If the charge separation is large, you know this is only of 26 micro EV, right? In the room temperature, it's 26 micro EV. So this term, if it is in the order of EVs, it's really dominant. So this only applies when you have a relatively dilute concentration, okay, dilute solution. Okay. So if we do that, now we see that the approximate solution is indeed an exponential decaying term. Okay, so what is that meaning of the balance? The meaning of the balance really shows how fast the field decays into the bulk from the first surface. Okay, how fast this electric field decays into, or concentration diffuse into the bulk from surface. Okay, now with this in mind, we can really start to talk about the so-called electro-osmotic effect. Electro-osmotic effect is observed when we have a capillary, and if there is now a boundary that is not of a charge neutrality, and we start to apply a voltage, what will happen? We are going to start to move charges within this very, very thin tube, right? This is the bilayer in which charges are separated. So we are going to start to move this charge. And this motion of charge, however, is counterbalanced by viscosity of fluid, right? It's counterbalanced by viscosity of fluid. So velocity at the surface is still zero. Fluid velocity at the surface is still zero. But fluid velocity above the bilayer is no longer zero, because you added another motion by electric field. Okay? As a result, the fluid field built up now from this surface to the end of the bilayer with now a non-zero value. And above that, it's almost flat, it's almost constant. This is what I show here in the navel-like color. Okay, navel-like color. And how significant is this new velocity, new fluid velocity? It is determined now based on really the applied electric field across this very thin the bilayer, which you see, and counterbalanced by the viscosity of the fluid. Okay, so velocity is proportional, directly proportional to applied field. Okay? It's very, very high. It's actually a very high contribution in this case. Now, let's just take a more detailed look. So, how is this different from a normal, otherwise normal flow? Okay? In the normal fluid flow, which is pressure driven, the fluid profile without the kinetic effect will be parabolic. Right? This is what we typically see. It's a parabolic flow distribution. Shear effect is almost available for every skin layer. But here, when electrokinetics is applied, the flow velocity within the center of the tube is all uniform. Okay? And this is exactly what is observed in typical channels. So what we are looking at here? We are looking at a fluorescence image of the fluid front inside the channel. When you start to apply, hydraulic pressure across the channel, you see that this shiny fluorescent molecule, which really indicates the front, will gradually develop into parabolic shape. Right? But instead, if now you try to apply an electric field, you will start to see a constant bend indicating the fluorescence molecule, motion of the fluorescence molecule within the fluid. They are remaining almost linear except for diffusion. Right? So this is so-called electro-osmotic flow. Okay? Electro-osmotic flow is very important for mixing and pumping. Yes?
Can you control the flow?
Yes, you can. There will be certainly a breakdown point if you apply this for apply very high voltage. Then you start to really introduce turbulence. Even if it is a low Reynolds number temp, you start to introduce turbulence. You start to introduce mixing. Okay. So this is a very important aspect of electrokinetics. If you do that instead using just a pump-driven, basically a pressure-driven flow, then you won't be able to do it. You have to introduce electrokinetics in order to achieve it. Okay? Any other questions? Can you follow this part? Right? So, if you like to read more, Professor Juan Santiago from Stanford University has a very nice website discussing all these different applications of mixing and a reaction that can be allowed within this, or other instabilities that are allowed within this electro-osmotic flows. However, you may have a concern. Okay. All this requires some conductive species in the solution. Okay. You can find many of these examples in biological fluid. You can really even find exactly the same principle of pumps that are available across membranes, cell membranes. They use this type of osmotic flow pumps too. But what if this is not conductive? If you have a dielectric particle, okay? Or if you have some, organelle that are weakly charged or even not charged, then what we would be able to do is so-called dielectrophoresis, okay? Dielectrophoresis
now is developed for this dielectric particles. Okay? Now, the principle is also rather simple. If you have a particle within a field, this particle will become polarized. If the system is uniform in the electric field, then the particle will not move. They will just stay there. Okay? At most, they will, you know, if you have an oscillating field, they will just flip this polarizability. But if this field is not uniform, then the dipole that you introduced onto this charged onto this dielectric particle now start to migrate. Okay, they start to see the field gradient. For example, if you have now a flat electrode and a tip electrode, the field concentration around the tip is high, and it will spread out. Right, so the particle will now try to follow that high concentration part. They will move towards the high concentration part in general case. However, if this particle is now in the AC field, then you also have to consider the sign of the polarizability. So remember we had a discussion previously about the Lorentzian models of different dipoles, right? And you see now at different frequency, you can excite different type of Rayleigh surface dipoles. If the excitation frequency is higher than the resonant frequency of this particle, then you start to flip the sign of the polarizability. So alpha of omega can be even negative. What is mean by negative? Negative polarizability. So in that case, the particle will move away from the concentration gradient. And that is also being used for cell separation. For example, it is observed red blood cells and, white blood cells, they have different polarizability at different frequency. Because of their size are different. They actually have different polarizability at different frequency. So when you choose the proper frequency, they are separated. One will be attached to the tip of the electrode, and the other will be attached to the flat end. Okay? So this also gives you a way of separation. And you can do this for lifting. You can really, like elevate your cell or particle. You can even rotate. Okay? You can even rotate the particle now based on the way you assign the electric field. So this is a so-called electrode rotation. If you have now two pairs of electrodes and each of them are retarded at different phase, then you will be able to let them spin. Okay? So those are all the possible driving mechanisms for particles or species within the fluid. And they all can be really applied to different appropriate size. For example, dielectric fluorescence, you see it is the force is proportional to particle volume. So in general, the smaller this particle is, the less effective. Right? Then you start then reduce back to like surface forces driven process problems. So there are different applications or different appropriate domains for different electrokinetic effect. So the term electrokinetics that we are talking about really is the use of electric field to drive different carriers and cable it to transport. Okay. So I would like to wrap up by recommending two important reading materials. Particularly, this is a very, very helpful
online resource that you can really refer to. There are different PowerPoint presentations from Dr. James Ducre from Ireland. And I also suggest you to start to read Intermolecular and Surface Forces, Chapter 12, which is Electrostatic Forces in Fluid. Okay. So let's wrap up over here. And if you have any quick questions, I can help to answer.